It is March 7, 2024. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes, and this is the return of the AEW Dynamite Review. Yes. I'm legitimately getting back into the swing of things, for those of you who have been following the lore of the past couple of months. Look, we're off of a tremendous pay-per-view on Sunday, being Revolution. We are off of a... the following Dynamite, I think, deserves scrutiny. And I was like, and there's enough stuff that happened on it, and I have enough thoughts about it to be like, to say to myself, okay, I'm gonna do this. This is probably as good a time as any to jump back into the review game, into the more regular content updating game, right? So here I am. It's a new edition of the review. Hello. Like and subscribe if you're on YouTube, of course. And, if you're on your favorite podcast application, well, show some love there. If you can, a follow, a subscription there as well. Whatever you can do to show some love would be tremendous. This is essentially where I'm at right now. Look, if some of you are still wondering, well, where you been all these months, Warren? Well, it's documented on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/MrWarrenHayes. It's there. You can figure it out. I'm not going to rehash all of that. All you need to know, if you're not aware, is that I'm doing quite better. Thank you. And which is why I'm here, right? Especially spearheaded, like I said, from last night's Dynamite. I'm saying last night because I'm recording this on the 7th. We're going to be talking about the March 6, 2024 Dynamite. I'm conflicted about last night's Dynamite. I really have two perceptions of this show. One which I am ready to fully embrace, just clasp my hands around them and just like hug them tight. And the other one I'm very weary of and that I'm ready to just, push away, hand wave back to the back of the line kind of thing. What was last night's Dynamite a great Dynamite? No. It really wasn't. Did it have great moments? Mm-hmm. Was it a noteworthy, newsworthy episode of Dynamite? Oh, absolutely. What are we doing here? Was there greatness on the show? Yes, there was, but it was not a great show. Because I feel like it's we had a tale of two shows, a tale of two Dynamites. I've often made the case to you all that I get antsy and I'm sure a lot of you are expecting this to as well, right? I get antsy when we start seeing WWE stuff on Dynamite, right? I get nervous about it and I talk to you about it. And over the past couple of months, I didn't have any opportunities to talk about it, but here we are. When they hire Jennifer Pepperman to be the VP of TV content, whatever her role, like something like that, it sounds an alarm. It rings a bell. I understand that she was likely, very likely brought in as a condition for Sasha Banks. Jesus Christ, I have been out of this for a while. Mercedes Moné to join the company. She probably leveraged her star power into bringing in one of her people, not unlike The Rock with the Gritz. That's fine. Like good for Moné if she can do that. Good for her if she has the leverage, I don't think there's really another word for it, to be able to pull that off. That being said, I wasn't too keen on it. I wasn't around when this hiring happened, right? And I was hanging around the Discord, the Mr. Warren Hayes Show Discord. Link is in the description. You should come join us. And I flat out said, I'm bringing in more people, more WWE people. I don't know why do we need more people in creative when it's already a mess? Not a mess, but there's already so many people involved in creative decisions in AEW, right? Why are we bringing more people in? And especially someone who's won Emmys for writing soap operas. And I'm not trying to belittle that accomplishment. I'll tell you one thing. Writing a daily soap opera is hard fucking work. Okay? It's not easy. So I'm not trying to belittle that and go and poo-poo what she's done. What I'm bringing forth here, this is a sidebar here because I haven't talked about Peppermint, so here we are. The thing is, I'll put it to you this way. Pro wrestling is the only form of entertainment that fights to show the world that it's not what it is. Vince McMahon, of course, struggled for years to try and change the perception. That's why he started calling it sports entertainment as opposed to wrestling, because wrestling felt beneath him. He started bringing on writers. It's not for nothing they started calling wrestlers superstars and not wrestlers, where everything wrestling related was set aside. Because we tell stories, pal. We make movies, pal. Vince was only ever good at the thing he hated. So he had to, which was pro wrestling, and had to mold that into something different. He had to mold that into something which clearly ended up being extremely successful despite it all. Despite everything. Now, the difference here is that, when Jennifer Peppermint got hired, I was anxious about it. I did not see this as a good thing. Yes, she got brought in to handle Mercedes' creative, that's fine. Mercedes wants to come in and be in the hands of someone she trusts. I can get behind that. It's pro wrestling. It's fine. I understand all of that. But bringing in more WWE people to a company that had its own identity, right? And is working to be a challenger brand, is concerning. And you need only look back at 2023 for a tremendous example of what happens when you skew the other way. I'm on record as saying, most of what AEW did in 2023 for a good chunk of it was not to my liking. I'd say the first quarter and the final quarter of 2023 for AEW was tremendous, but the sandwich, the meat in the middle, the accoutrements that made this wrestling sandwich were not up to par. Between the Brochacho stuff and Tony Storm and just more and more sports entertainment stuff leaking into the shows, I was not there for it. I was there for MJF and Bryan Danielson having a tremendous Iron Man match. I was there for the C2, the Continental Classic, but everything in between those events was questionable. Really, really questionable. And you started to feel over the past, ever since the C2, leading into, post World's End, you really started to feel like AEW was finding its footing, getting back to what it was. And you know, it's a bit of a tired expression, but nonetheless, you know, you started to it started to restore the feeling. And I would say, like, you know, you'd be hard pressed to not get your feeling restored after watching the past couple of weeks of television and watching Revolution as well. So when I see these people who come in with their legitimate outsiders, like, these are not in-house hires, right? These are not people coming in coming up from within. These are people coming from outside. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to discredit anything she's done, but you bring in former soap opera writers who've then converted to WWE. You bring them into AEW. What are you trying to do? What is it about pro wrestling that we feel requires writers? That we feel requires a writers and, you know, this word producers and all that, as if to legitimize what we're watching so that it doesn't feel like silly little things happening. Now, if you have producers and writers working on this, then it's elevated. It's not just pro wrestling, it's something bigger. Why do we always have to feel, and when I say we, I mean the wrestling business, why do we always have to feel like things have to be that we need this level of justification to make pro wrestling feel legitimate? That's the only way I can go about it. Does that make sense? And it's annoying. And I think, you know, look, Jennifer Pepperman, maybe she'll adapt wonderfully to AEW, but as it stands right now, because right now I'm Digress Jones over here, to the degree where I start seeing, if I continue seeing heavy WWE influence on the shows, I can point fingers. I can be like, well, isn't that odd that, like, isn't that odd that we had started getting back to the old routines of the old Dynamite that we all knew and loved, and then all of a sudden last night we get an extensive opening promo that leads into a match, and a can they coexist kind of match. We'll get to that in a second. But isn't that odd? Like, on one of the first nights that I guess Jennifer Pepperman is involved. I don't know how involved she is. But I raise these concerns. Let's get back on track here. I'm gonna be all over the place. I raise these concerns because AEW was built on a promise to be different, to offer an alternative, to be a challenger to what was happening. And that's how it got a lot of wrestling fans to follow it, because a lot of these wrestling fans, like myself, were fed up of the singular vision of WWE and wanted something fresher, something closer to what we love as pro wrestling. That's why I think WWE is hitting the highs right now, because all of us malcontents who would be at who'd watch WWE and bitch about it, we don't do that anymore. It's not worth the effort because we have something else. We don't need to try to mold the market leader into what we want it, because we have an alternative. We have a response. We have something that is what we want. So we don't have to try and mold the other guys into what we want, and that falling on deaf ears and then just creating frustrations all around, right? So that's the basis AEW was built on. And that's crucial, right? So when I see things that make me feel like I'm watching Raw or SmackDown, I get concerned. I get concerned. And you can chalk it up to PTSD if you want. But I get concerned because it's not what AEW fans want. AEW fans flock to AEW because they did not like the WWE product. So, again, this is why a substantial chunk of 2023 will be remembered as a bad era of AEW and probably drove some fans away in the meantime. No matter what the Eric Bischoffs or Raj Geary's might tell you, you know, when they started telling, oh, what a great turn of events, now AEW is finding its stride. It didn't do tremendous business. It didn't do the business that they, it didn't do the business that was expected. They would have liked to, they would have liked to tell you that this was a great creative move and was a great boon for AEW, but turned out the buzz, the energy, the feel, the vibe, it all came back when they decided to pivot from that, when they decided to make a thing out of the Continental Classic and we put our money where our mouth is. But I still remain conflicted. I remain conflicted on last night's show. Because there are things on that show that made me shudder. Like, just gave me the willies. And other things that were tremendous. And even some of the things that made me shudder. Like, the whole season premiere thing, okay? I cringed when I saw that start moving around. That is absolutely... When did you ever hear Gordon Solie say tonight is the season premiere? Like, Tony Schiavone in WCW never talked about this is the season premiere. This is a WWE thing and a fairly recent one is at that. The season premieres. So again, I see this. I see they're talking about season premieres. I'm like, God, come on. Just do something different. Just do something different. But, so, again, this is a good example of my confliction here. My confliction. The fact that I'm conflicted. Because on one end, there's that. They announce it as a season premiere, and I'm like, what's the point? There's no rhyme or reason for this. Like, this is silly. Yeah, it's silly, you know? But then, they do the season, but then they actually do the season premiere. And as opposed to when WWE does their season premieres, right? The season premiere Raw, the season premiere SmackDown, and the show looks the same, feels the same. There's no big switch ups. There's no changes. It's the same thing that you were watching from the previous week. Nothing could make you think that you're watching a season premiere. AEW last night made it feel different. Now, sure, look, the presentation, right? The new song, the new logo, the new graphics, the tunnels are back and they look great. I love the stage. I think the tunnels is what, and I love how they've changed how the tunnels look. You know, they're a little more front facing, like little tweaks, the little background that they shoot in it, and it's tremendous. So yes, you know, all of that establishes a season premiere. But I think more importantly than the window dressing is the content. And what did you get? You got new stars coming out, new faces, new people that you're supposed to get behind. We're moving on from things, notions that were once established. we're moving on into different, into another direction. That doesn't mean it's a complete turn, maybe just a little swerve. But that's tremendous. Like, if anything, despite the fact where I'm like, season premiere, ugh, I gotta give him props. It, last night's Dynamite felt different, felt like it was going in another direction, that it was introducing us to something else. So even though I am personally conflicted by last night's show, and we'll see as we go down the card here, and we start breaking things down, despite, I can recognize the good in this, as opposed to just this, the stinker poos. The stuff that didn't work. The stuff that was very WWE. And listen, even, you know, I get shit for it. You know, even people in my Discord are like, well, I'm fine with it. All right. I'm not. And you know, if they're fine with opening promos that last 15 minutes and lead into matches, boy, have I got a show for you. Anyway, let's get into this review proper, now that I've done my preamble, my intro. We were in Duluth, Georgia last night being March 6, 2024, at the Gas South Arena. WrestleTix has not finalized everything just yet. 2,958 tickets. That's not even 3,000. So we're eventually going to get there. If the product continues to feel hot, like it is right now, or continues to be hotter, is what I'm trying to say. Because I think the vibes are good. But if it gets hotter and hotter, these things are going to go on to the rise. You know, I talked about it on the Revolution review this week, which was a tremendously successful gate for AEW. This not so much, like barely scraping up to 3,000 tickets distributed is that's not great. That's really not great, especially when their last time. We were in Duluth at the Gas South Arena. That was in August 23rd. 5,343 tickets distributed. Or a far cry from that. I wonder why tickets were so low as opposed to last time. Anyway, so the show opens up with Swerve and Tony Schiavone. And then they do, so this is where I got triggered. There's no other way to put it. It played off of all my fears. All of them. Including my fear of drowning. That would be that's legitimately the death I feared the most. The one way of going I feared the most. Drowning seems awful. Can't breathe. Everything gets clogged up. And then, anyway, I'm not going to talk about that. Giving me the heebie-jeebies. But no, Tony and Swerve are there. Then Joe joins in and they do the whole thing, right? And then the the Undisputed Kingdom. And then they all do the, it's one of these carousels. Everyone's getting their promo time. There's some back and forth. And then it's, you know, and then it all ends with maybe we should have a match tonight. Oh, we should do the the match right now. The heels try to get out of there, but then Tony Schiavone says, "No, I just got the word. The match is happening right now. Holla, holla, playa, playa." And can they coexist? Right? They put Swerve and Samoa Joe in a team right after Swerve was challenging Joe and Joe was talking shit to Swerve against the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. Now, you want to talk about WWE tropes here? Chock full. Like, this was a grab bag of WWE tropes. You had the opening long extended promo. You had the mild back and forth. You had the impromptu match being made on the spot. And then you had the coexist. Can they coexist spot? Which, by the way, Taz outright said it. Like, word for word. We'll have to find out if they can coexist. Like, okay. And it even went all the way down to tag team champions getting pinned. Like, you could not have a more perfect circle of stuff happening that you transpose this on Raw and it wouldn't feel out of place. And even worse yet, you'd have some AEW fans who would see this on Raw and say, this stuff stinks, but they see it on AEW. And I mean this, and this is sincere. They see this on AEW and they're like, oh, I kind of like this. Oh, this is fun. Nice little way to kick off a match. I don't get it. I don't understand. Again, if you're into this stuff, I got a show for you. Now, this was incredibly cringe, and I was upset. And I was like, is this? And it felt so out of place after a great pay-per-view, a legitimately, observably great pay-per-view, like AEW Revolution, that we start off like this. Made no sense to me. No sense at all. Swerve gets the win with the JML driver. Then after that, Joe chokes him out with the Kikina clutch. A couple of things worse were served here. A couple of things were useful out of this. Clearly cemented Swerve Strickland as a babyface. There's no little signs, no innuendo, no wondering. He's a babyface now. This was he cut a babyface promo before everything started going downhill. And I was into it. Makes a lot of sense. Which establishes very clearly at the same time that Hangman Adam Page is the heel. So that's fine. This is all fine. They also established, you know, they haven't outright said it, of course, but this is a fair assessment at this point that Swerve versus Joe for the world title is going to happen at Dynasty. Very likely. You know, Wardlow was around with the Undisputed Kingdom, but they clearly said that Wardlow's getting his title shot next week at Big Business, which is what a lot of us assumed. I talked about it on the at the Revolution review when Wardlow won. It's like he's not a pay-per-view challenger. He's a TV challenger, and that's fine. And he's going to do his thing, and it's going to be good. It's going to be fine. We'll be able to move on from that and then focus on Swerve and Joe, most likely. Look, this was the most WWE thing. This was a Raw entrance, vintage Raw, as another commentator would say. I didn't care for it. It started off hot. I thought Swerve was doing great. Started off hot, but it all sort of tumbled and fell into tropes. And we were not done with these tropes. Renee Paquette is backstage trying to interview Hook, but Chris Jericho lands in and he says he respects Taz because he dropped him on his head when he wrestled at the ECW Arena. And then he sees, so he felt a connection to Hook when Hook dropped him on his head. So there you go. We have the Young Bucks who said, we have two huge announcements. And they're just standing there with grins and standing very stoically. And, you know, I was wondering, you know, as if they were reading off a prompt. And I was kind of wondering if this wasn't a rib on Tony Khan. Because they had the smile, you know, and the eyes fixated right in the middle of the camera kind of thing, you know. Not unlike Tony does when he does his big announcements, right? So I was wondering if this wasn't kind of a, if this wasn't a bit of a spoof. I enjoyed that. This leads us to the FTW title, where Hook defeated Brian Cage. This is a fine little plunder match. It was all right. I thought it was okay. Nothing out of the ordinary. I feel like we're continuing to cover up for Hook's weaknesses here. As long as he's FTW champion, he can always wrestle in no DQ situations. And I think that masks a lot of failings, a lot of problems that he still might have. But this was pretty good, you know, and we got pretty much your typical plunder match. Tax got involved, thumbtacks, and Brian Cage gets exploder suplexed into it and into the tax, and none of the tax stay, embed themselves. And they have the camera, zoom in as they always do, right? When you use tax, and there's like maybe two, and one of them is like, you know, it's like on the flip side. Like maybe, you know, this man has impenetrable skin. Hook eats some tacks as well when he's got the red rum locked in, and Brian Cage just like drops back so that Hook lands on the tacks, hoping that Hook will let go of the red rum, but he doesn't. Referee stops the match. Yeah, it was all right. I enjoyed it for what it was, but you know, it's nothing. Nothing I'll remember after I'm done talking about this. After the match, the Gates of Agony show up. They jump Hook. They do the beatdown until Chris Jericho makes the save. So I've already seen it. A lot of people upset, disappointed, angry, frustrated. What's a bunch of negative emotions people feel? Depressed. That Chris Jericho is going to be working with Hook. Because we've talked about it on this channel. I made a whole video about it along with Joe Lanza of Voices of Wrestling, where we talked about the myth of the Jericho Vortex. This thing where Jericho sucks in talent and he always comes out on top, but the talent then gets left behind. Where, when we were talking about it at the time, we broke down all of his feuds, and most of the people that he feuded with ended up being in a better spot or in a good spot. And so I'm not a believer in this, and maybe you are, maybe, you know, you always see like, oh, Jericho, he always seems to get the best out of it. Jericho is Chris Jericho. All right. And I want us to talk just on the wrestling level here, the professional, what you see on TV, personal stuff, political leanings, rumors. That's a whole other conversation. But Chris Jericho is a pro wrestling star. If you had Chris Jericho in your promotion, would you keep him off TV? Of course not. You're putting a... I think this is one of the... You know, over the past couple of weeks, we haven't been seeing him as much. I think that's... There's even a few weeks... This was all while I was convalescing, getting better. I think this is all... I think he's been... this has been the longest strip where Jericho has been off television, right? I think he's been off TV more than he's been on since the start of the year. I don't have a problem with this, because if only because this means more TV time for Hook. Because Jericho gets on television, because look, he's Chris Jericho. You put your stars on TV. He gets big reactions in the buildings. People still like him. You may not like him, but people still do. And I don't buy this thing. I really don't, where Jericho sucks the talent into this vortex and only he gets spit out. Everyone else is lost in some kind of void. It doesn't work that way. It's unreasonable. And Chris Jericho has put over more people in his time in AEW than he has won matches. But there's an inherent dislike for him, and I get where it comes from. I completely understand. But if you want to compartmentalize for a second and think about what he does and what he's been doing, the record speaks for itself. Now they're going to try this with Hook. Go right ahead. You know, people are saying, yeah, it's time for Hook to move on the next level. He's going to be working with Chris Jericho. Might not be, see, then it's like, might not be the person you wanted him to work with, but that this guarantees TV time for Hook every week in feuds and whatnot that will get attention, that will get TV time because Chris Jericho. We get a package for video package, I should say, not an actual package. For the Young Bucks, then the best friends are interviewed by Renee backstage. Orange Cassidy says he's going to do his best to fill his Jane Sport with full of gold again. And asked about the tag team tournament coming up, Chuck Taylor says, well, I'm not clear. Why don't you being Trent and OC, why don't you guys go for it? He's like, cool. Hey, there you go. You know, I'm reserving all judgment in regards to this tag team tournament until I see some brackets. Look, Tony hyped it. He did some hype for it, or at least they replayed. AEW replayed parts of the audio from the press conference after Revolution, where Tony was saying, you know, it's going to be our own bracket madness in March and so on and so forth. All right, let's get some brackets. Let's predict some stuff. This is what's fun with tournaments. I don't have problems with tournaments. I love tournament wrestling. I just think North Americans are not used to tournaments and wrestling, but it's a fantastic way to get people over. It's a fantastic way to tell some stories and build new stories and whatnot. I think it makes a lot of sense. And they're fun. They're just fun. And everything has stakes. So I don't have a problem with it. I'm just reserving judgment as to how exciting it'll be. Killswitch defeated Matt Menard. Basically an enhancement match for Killswitch, despite the fact that Menard did get some offense in. After the match, though, Killswitch continues beating down on Matt Menard until Dan Garcia runs in to make the save. Nick Wayne gets sicked on him. But as everyone is going back up the ramp, Adam Copeland shows up. Takes out Nick Wayne. Fends off a low blow by Mother Wayne. Christian Cage takes a powder. He runs all the way through the arena to the backstage area. And steals a car. Yeah, going all GTA on us. That's easily a 4-star, you know, a 4. He's got this 4-star meter up. And he hits the bricks. And Copeland turns to the camera, says we're going to end this on March 20th in Toronto. Copeland Cage 3 for the TNT title in an I Quit match. There you go. That's good. I'd have done the same thing. Will this push some tickets? Probably, but I'm looking forward to this match. You know, this has been well built. And even with Daniel Garcia being like a little sidebar feud leading back to this, I think it was very well done. Great booking. Renee Paquette is with Kyle O'Reilly backstage. He says the reason why he didn't join the Undisputed Kingdom is because he doesn't want to hang out with his friends. He wants to, he's been given a second chance and he wants to do things on his own. So we'll see how that goes. Look, the last time he was given a singles push, it didn't quite work out the way everyone thought it would, right? We'll see. We'll see what this leads to. We get a recap of Sting's retirement after that. And then Tony Schiavone welcomes the Bucks to make their big announcements. So the first big announcement that they do is split into two parts. And by the way, I don't know how you cannot love the Young Bucks right now. I don't know how you cannot be completely head over heels enamored with them. They're just tremendous. They are above and beyond anything that they've done before. It's just been this EVP stuff. Just bringing out the best out of them. I've always said it. The Young Bucks are best as heels. But this level here, I've never seen them this good. I've never seen them this tremendous. And leaning into all of the things that the haters online say about them, it's even in character for them. It works. Everything works. Anyway, the first part of the first announcement was that they're suspending Hangman Adam Page from the Elite because of his actions at Revolution, beating up referees and whatnot. But suspended from the Elite. Okay, so that's important. And there's something we hadn't heard in a while, right? Where people are like, well, what's the status of the Elite? Well, there we go. We're settling this up here. And then the second part of the first announcement is about Kenny Omega. They say outright fire Kenny Omega. They say, oh, he's not around. Disappeared off the face of the earth. Hasn't been making these dates. You're fired from the Elite. There you go. So that leads us to... So there you go. There's some completionist stuff for the Elite thing. But then the other big announcement, they're about ready to do it. And Eddie Kingston comes in. Now, Eddie Kingston got his promo time cut. What was it, last week or 2 weeks ago by the Bucks, right? And Eddie's known to carry a grudge. So he's in the ring and he's like, look, tosses them some money. Says, you might as well find me now because I've got something to say. Let's take this conversation offline is what the Bucks say to Eddie. But then they start throwing punches at each other. And there's a low blow. They take him down. EVP trigger gets set up. And then the coin drop happens. The music hits. The crowd erupts. Kazuchika Okada makes his official AEW debut. Finally, he gets to the ring. You think he's coming to save Eddie Kingston, but no, he rainmakers him instead. He is the newest member of the Elite. Which is tremendous. And Okada got such an enormous reaction from the crowd. Everyone in that building knew who he was. You losers. Yeah, everyone could just say, we don't know who that guy is. You know that it's just bad faith. We've been telling you it's bad faith. We've been telling you it's bad faith since the Milwaukee show when he showed up for, setting up for Bindor. And people went bonkers. No one knows who these guys are. Please. I think it's tremendous. I think it's tremendous that he's working with the Bucks as well. His old friends from the TNA. So he's finally here. It's done. Sealed. Proper. To tell you I didn't breathe a sigh of relief would be lying to you all because I was a little anxious. I was a little, oh shit, what if, you still have that what if, like it didn't make sense, but you never know. It's pro wrestling. If it wouldn't make sense for him to go to WWE, and I don't see why WWE would spend the money to get him. And listen, this is the thing. This is the pattern that we've seen from Tony Khan when it comes to these big free agents. He makes sure that he nails them down. He makes sure that he signs them every single. You can talk about CM Punk all you want. You can talk about Lexus King. You can talk about Jade Cargill. But CM Punk is different. We'll accept that. Mike Santana. But, Jade is a good example because everyone considers Jade to be this megastar. At least he's the potential in her. And he just let her go. It's like, they came to an understanding. It's like, no, we're not going to renew you. And everyone was in agreement that it was probably the best move for Jade. Jade, in AEW, if the Fed ever decides to do something with her, because outside of walking out of limousines, what has she been doing? If the Fed ever decides to do something with her, I think she can have potential. He let Andrade go. People are like, big mistake. Andrade had his first match on Raw since leaving, which was a month ago. Something to that effect. He learned more than that. He left after the C2. C2 was after World's End. He had a match on World's End, right? And then he sayonara'd. Tony Khan makes sure that these big free agents become his. He fights for them and because he sees value in them. And there might have been bidding wars for Will Ospreay, for Monet, for Okada, but he made sure that he won them all. And these, do not underestimate these three big signings that are all just like trickling in over the past, you know, over the next couple of, over the past couple of weeks and then next week. These are all big time signings for this company. Huge. And you can just see with Will Ospreay how big it is. But Okada is too. Probably the most, one of the most significant, one of the top five most significant wrestlers in Puro, making his debut on American television in AEW. And he gets it. Tony gets it. There's all sorts of... There was no way he was letting this pass him by. He was not signing Okada. And Okada's here. So again, like I said, a little relieved, quite frankly. I'm glad that Kazuchika Okada, how about put it this way? I'm glad Kazuchika Okada is going to be wrestling on a wrestling show that I regularly watch. That he's not going to be thrown away into some area, some product that I don't have a connection with, that I don't watch. Okada's, as far as the debut goes, how about we just move away from my feelings here? As far as the debut goes, I've seen a lot of debate on it. I've seen a lot of thoughts about it. I think it's great. I think he had a tremendous debut. I think it probably would have come across bigger if the Young Bucks themselves were bigger stars within their own company, which is wild to say. But I think it would have come across bigger as that. But look at how he was positioned at the end. And the Bucks are going to make sure Okada gets over. Here's the thing. There's no political plays here. There's nothing. The Bucks are going to do everything in their power to make sure Okada gets over. And look at what they did here. The last shot that you have of the new elite is Okada front and center, right, doing the hand gimmick, right in the middle of the camera, Matt and Nick in the background. I mean, not standing toe-to-toe, side-by-side is what I meant, not standing side-by-side, not high-fiving each other, Okada being right there in the middle. These things are by design, folks. These are not mistakes. Like seeing Bryan Danielson and Will Ospreay, the final shot of them, including the Dynasty, the AEW Dynasty logo. I'm jumping ahead. But this is by design. Okada's going to come across as a big deal. Hey, don't you worry about that. Not sure he should be a heel. Well, he started off as a heel, right? Wasn't that how he started off? Like an entitled rich guy? That was his thing. And you know what? Okada is probably like, you know what? I want to do something different here. I want to try something different. You know, he's been the heroic baby face for so long. Maybe here's like, let's try something out creatively. Let's do something different. I'm all for it. Now, could they have done something bigger, better? You could argue they could do that with everyone. I'm not saying that this was the greatest debut of all time, but it was a tremendous debut. I thought it was great. And the fact that they did this with an Eddie Kingston thing, where Okada came in to save Eddie Kingston, just goes to show that AEW knows its fan base knows who Kazuchika Okada is. Because if it was a complete anonymous guy, they wouldn't have done this. But everyone was expecting Okada, you know, heroic, good guy, Kazuchika Okada coming in. Yeah, he's going to save Eddie Kingston, you know, the king of the bums. He's going to say, no. Okada's got no time for this. Good for him. I liked the debut a lot. I thought it was tremendous. I am relieved that he's in AEW. That just goes without saying. But I said it anyway. I'm going to try and speed things up a little bit here. Didn't want to necessarily go this long. But here we are. Once again, Warren Hayes goes long. Shock and awe. Good debut. And if anyone online is making you feel bad because of this, don't. I have no idea what the discourse is in regards to Okada, you know, probably the bad faithers are saying, oh, we don't know who this guy is. But had he signed with the Fed, they would all know who he is, you know. First of all, I can't endorse enough leaving X formerly Twitter behind. It just clears your mind, makes you focus on what you like as opposed to what others don't like. Gives you a whole new appreciation for leave it behind. There's no one serious left on that app. There really isn't. Everyone's gone. Everyone that has true contributions, has stuff to say, they're gone. It's just little cloud goblins now, all trying to get, you know, to get a few pennies away from old Elon. And just never mind. Leave it behind. Come join the Mr. Warren Hayes Show Discord, for instance. Join the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Like, the communities are there. They still exist for wrestling fans. They're still there. That's going to be just like years ago where you're going to have to find them. You're going to have to look it up. You're going to have to connect with in other ways than weirdo takes all the time. You get a recap of Will Ospreay versus Kenesuke Takeshita from Revolution, which was, oh, what a match. What a fucking match. Tremendous stuff. Riho defeated Chris Statlander, which up to this point was my match of the night. It was absolutely good. Just have a fun, well-executed, well-wrestled, well-put-together match. Where Riho, of course, has trouble standing up to the power of Chris Statlander. Eats a stalling suplex. But she fights back with drop kicks and as much as he can. Statlander lands some lariats and rolls through a flying crossbody by Riho. But Riho reverses it into a dragon suplex. That was a tremendous spot. Powerbomb by Statlander. Then Stokely leaves the chain in the ring for Statlander to use it, who has a moment. She has it in her fist. Maybe I should do it because I can't put this wrestler away, this little 90-pound wrestler. I can't remember. I wish JR would have been there to remind me every 2 minutes of Rio's weight. She chooses not to use the chain, but that's her mistake. Rio wins with the roll-up. This was very good. This was a solid, well-executed, dynamic wrestling match. And, you know, it goes to further my point that I made on at the Revolution review, where it's like, the women's division just go ebbs and flows, but tremendously. Like, you get these peaks, and then you get these really dank valleys. You know, this was, by all observable metric, and people will tell you, oh, you know, wrestling is subjective. I disagree with that to a degree, because there are things that are observable, that are undeniable when you see it. And this was a better match than Storm versus Perazzo at Revolution. And anyone who tries to tell you the opposite is wrong. Oh, but it's how I feel. It's subjective. Yeah, but observably, like, just looking at the execution, just looking how the match was laid out, looking at the crowd reaction, this match was better in every single way. But I digress. Jones again. The idea is that again, I'm like, I'm thinking about the women's division, and I don't understand. I have trouble wrapping my head around how we can go from here to here so quickly, week after week, show after show. Like, they're announcing a Mariah May match for Collision on Saturday, and a lot of people are like, hell yeah, Mariah May, because of her great performance she had on Collision. What was it, last week? The week before? I don't remember. But she had a recent singles match on Collision. People are like, yeah, this girl can go. Look. In any extent, this match worked, connected, it ruled. And after a commercial, we come back. Renee Paquette is with Willow Nightingale and Stokely. Stokely says he loves, he thinks that Chris is one of the best performers in AEW. He just wishes she'd accept his help. And then Willow is informed that she's getting a match against Riho next week. And she has her eyes set on the TBS title. Good for her. Then we're back to Tony Schiavone in the ring to interview Darby Allin. And, you know, Darby puts over, talks again about being homeless just like 5 years ago. And now here he is, main eventing one of the greatest AEW pay-per-views ever, Instinct's retirement match. He did everything he could. He's lacerated, beat up, and tired. Next week, he has Jay White. And then at the end of the month, he's climbing Mount Everest. And he wants to take this time to thank everyone, because he might not make it back. You know, that's not hyperbole. There's a lot of deaths to trying to count. That's why Mount Everest is what it is, right? Anyway, he wants to go do that. Good for him. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't, even when I was healthy, I wouldn't have done that. Jay White comes out with the guns. And he, you know, he cuts what seems to be a good promo, you know, but, you know, he tries to diminish what Darby did at Revolution. And so he tries to bring him down, but, it's a little long in the tooth. It takes a while to get to the point. I don't think this is Jay's best work, even though he talked up a storm. This was fine. It was a fine promo, basically hyping up the match next week. Basically saying, you know, no one will think less of you, Darby, if you choke and don't show up on the match next week and all that stuff. Darby does echo a lot of, in his response, what a lot of what I said, you know, said you've main evented the Tokyo Dome, and now you're playing around with cardboard cutouts. What are you doing here since you came here? I don't believe the hype. I don't think you're as good as you say you are. And I'm like, he's not wrong. There we go. Julia Hart, I have, you know, this was all right. This was fine. I don't think it blew me away. Didn't sell me a ticket for this match. It's all right. It is fine. Julia Hart and Sky Blue are backstage. Julia cuts a promo, says you've forgotten who she is, and she's doing an open house challenge on Rampage. Okie dokie. Then the House of Black are all together to cut a promo, calling out Mark Briscoe on Collision. Then that leads us to Mark Briscoe backstage with Renee Paquette, talking about that match. And then Jay Lethal comes in, and Jay says, I got your back. We'll find a partner. Mark Briscoe says, don't bring Jeff Jarrett. Jay says, yeah, we should bring a dirty player like Jeff Jarrett. And Mark says, okay, I trust you. At least, look, this, they've set some seeds during the Continental Classic that Jay White and his relationship with Jeff Jarrett and the rest might be a little strained. Maybe we'll get a payoff to that. And that would be interesting because, you know, be a good through line here. So all of this in hour two was, as opposed to what was happening in hour one, was making me feel good. I was like, okay, this feels more and more like Dynamite. Whatever they were doing at the start of the show and in hour one, which I didn't think was all that great, it was just fine, but nothing tremendous. Now I thought, now we were cooking. We got ourselves a really good match in this. We got Okada's debut. We're setting stuff up. And then we get Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, which is one of the greatest Dynamite matches you'll ever see. Again, no hyperbole. I think that's exactly what this was. Will Ospreay having his first singles TV match after all the hype, after his tremendous match with Kenesuke Takeshita on Sunday. Well, what does he say? What does he do? Well, I gotta show up here too. And he has a 20-minute match with Kyle Fletcher on TV, which tore the house down. A tremendous fight between the two. I'd want to say Will Ospreay does it again, but I wouldn't call this a 5-star match. I'd say, what? You want to give this 4.5, 4.75? Go right ahead. I don't think it's a 5-star match. I think it's a tremendous match, though. And that final sequence, where they're in and out of tombstones and into a poison rana. We get a Liger Bomb by Will Ospreay. Does an avalanche poison rana, hidden blade, but Fletcher kicks out. Then we get that tremendous sequence of reversals. Just stuff happening fast. You can't keep up with it. And they're both these guys, smooth, hitting everything. Oscutter. Fletcher kicks out again, but he eats a hidden blade and he's inviting it. All right, you got me. We're done. Hit me in the face. And he hits him in the face. Will Ospreay is going to be, look, we're talking about being a stars and being stars and whatnot. Will Ospreay is going to be a superstar for this company. And he just might turn out to be a superstar in pro wrestling, period. Like, for a lot of us, he already was. But this consecration, this path that he's been on, then coming to North America and going on this huge TV stage, he has owned his entrances, his presence. he commands the room. A guy who just a few years ago, we're all sitting around going, "Ah, his promos aren't great, aren't they? These aren't great promos." Will Ospreay's a great wrestler and all, but promos. And this is a guy who he's just got everything. And he's what, 30? You don't think that this is probably the best? You don't think that this is probably the best signing that AEW has done in its history? Get yourself a young guy who's at the top of his game, who is considered by many to be the greatest wrestler in the world. A guy who's been overperforming. He's going to be undeniable. He practically already is. But now, with the North American TV backing him up, the ascension is going to continue. You know, and I don't, you know, I don't want to diminish anything. I don't want to create any scares, and I haven't heard anything or whatnot, you know, but, you know, Kenny Omega, another generational, tremendous worker, one of the best to ever do it. And for a while, you could say he was the greatest wrestler in the world. You know, plagued by injuries, getting up there in age. There's only so much Kenny will be able to deliver on that level of work rate, on that level of spectacle, before his body completely shuts down and says, "Listen, there's only so much cupping you'll be able to do I just won't be able to follow anymore." Whereas Ospreay likely has the best years of his career ahead of him still, which is bonkers to think about in that perspective. Bonkers. And then you have Danielson coming out to tease a match. Will Ospreay, Brian Danielson at the Dynasty thing. Yeah, there you go. There's your trip. There's your trip to St. Louis. There you go. Teasing it. And look, and at the same time, of course, he's wrestling Kyle Fletcher, one of his boys. And a guy who is... who also has all the potential to become a great star as well. We've talked about it before. I think Kyle Fletcher has all the necessary ingredients. He's got the tools. It's up to him to see how far he's ready to go, right? That's usually how prospects work, right? I'm not saying he's a guaranteed top guy, but he has everything to be a top guy. So on top of that, he's wrestling his boy, Kyle Fletcher. Yes, they know each other and they were, you know, the synchronicity between the two. Sure, that's all fine and dandy. But Kyle Fletcher looked like a star here as well. It was just an outstanding, mind-boggling match for TV, with a Will Ospreay who is establishing his territory. He's coming in and he's not going to be a bit player. He's not going to be wrestling in a feud with Kyle O'Reilly, you know, sixth from the top. He's going to be a big time player for this company moving forward. That's what you do. And he's going to get his due sooner than we believe, I'd say. And he's getting Danielson next. I talked about this on the Revolution review. Danielson's 2024, his output is just phenomenal. No one can touch him in regards to quantity, quality. He's just been phenomenal. And now he's getting, we're getting Danielson versus Ospreay. What more do you want, man? You know, it's a good time to be a pro wrestling fan. So, ultimately, I end this review and watching the show on a high. Because I thought the second hour was much more what I expect out of AEW. The first hour, I thought I was watching an episode of The Twilight Zone. I thought I was watching completely something else. You could have changed any of those guys from the opening segment with the Bloodline and Cody and Seth. It would have all been the same thing. Except, you know, you wouldn't have gotten anyone to call to say the words Diarrhea Dwayne. So I'm conflicted. I'm still very conflicted because I see the brilliance of AEW. I see it, but I get concerned. And I'm not sitting here tearing the house down, burning everything down, not unlike some reviews I did last year. This was far from the worst Dynamite I ever saw. This was not a great one. This turned out to be very good. This turned out to be good on the backs of the main event, of the women, and of the Young Bucks Okada segment. Those were enough to elevate the show. We were teetering close. So, overall, I guess I liked it, but I also didn't. It's a very weird one. And let's see what happens next. Look, next week it's the big debut. That's going to be a big deal for AEW, for fans. It's going to be a big moment, and I'm excited for it. I hope you're excited for it too. We'll see how things continue to develop. I don't feel secure with this opening, with this WWE stuff still infiltrating its way. Just all I want them to be is different. I don't want them to copy. I don't want them to do what the other guys do. I want them to be their own person. And when they do main events like Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, that's where they establish their identity. No way in hell would you see a match like that on a Monday night or a Friday night. You just wouldn't. But that's okay. Because their identity is somewhere else. The other guys, they do other things to establish their identity. I want AEW to continue doing what they do best. And what they do best is great angles, great booking, excellent matches. That's all. Oh, and forgot to mention, circling back to the Kazuchika Okada thing. You know, I think this, you know, the fact that they fired Kenny and Okada was brought in as the newest member, I think they planted a seed there. I'm not sure how I feel about it. You know, when a lot of people got excited, you know, for Okada, you know, at the prospect of Okada coming in, is like, you know, everyone said Okada, Kenny, Okada. But I'm like, man, I would be much more excited for the matches we haven't seen, for the new matchups. I know nostalgia goes a long way in wrestling too. Don't get me wrong. I understand it. I ultimately would not be angry if they did run another Omega Okada, right? But how about Okada versus guys that you... How about Okada versus Swerve Strickland? That'd be fun. How about Okada versus Samoa Joe? What, you know, stuff that we really haven't seen. Stuff that is completely new. Okada and Takeshita. Okada and Kyle Fletcher at this point, right? It's like, now everyone's going, oh, we'll get Okada versus Will. It's been there, done that. Jesus Christ. You know, it's like, but then I get it. Not everyone watches or watched New Japan. I understand the allure of then being, oh, well, I'll finally get to see what everyone's talking about. And I get all of that, you know, but I'm more excited at the prospects of matches that I've never seen before than rehashing old feuds, bringing back old memories. I don't know. Is it just me? That's the final thought on a review that was maybe scattered a little all over the place. But I, you know, I'm getting back into the groove of things. Don't shoot me. Thank you for being here. One last plea for a like or a subscribe or any kind of love that you can show on YouTube or on your favorite podcast application. I would appreciate a great deal. I'll be back soon with something else. I don't know. Again, I'm going day by day, bit by bit. Once I'm committed to schedule, once I commit myself back to stuff, y'all will be the first to know. Follow me here on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes, especially on the community tab for news, or on Blue Sky as well, or in the Mr. Warren Hayes Show Discord. Those are really the best places. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time.